it was stressful. It was definitely not easy. And but I got in the car and both of them said to me, "Don't forget, we always love you." Mm. And that was good. Oh, look, I'm getting emotional now.
Hello, my name's Kay Anderson, and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So if you are a longtime listener of the show, then you may have picked up on something. Well, hopefully you've picked up on a few things, but the thing that I'm talking about in particular today is this phenomenon, I love that word, this phenomenon of queer men feeling more comfortable in a lesbian bar than in any other space. And obviously there's no one reason for it, but it seems to me to come down to this lack of pretense or lack of attitude that you find in a lesbian bar. Which brings us to this week's conversation. I'm obviously talking to a queer man about a lesbian bar, so that's why I'm setting this all up. We are headed back to the city that I grew up in, Adelaide, which holds a very soft spot in my heart, to visit the lesbian bar, Beans Bar. And I've only just twigged that bean is probably like flicking the bean, right? My guest is Marcus Hammonds, who is a bit of a man about town in Adelaide. He's an interior designer, an event promoter, and he writes a column for the local newspaper. Now, when he first came out, and he came out to his parents following a Tina Turner concert, which is probably one of the best coming out stories of anyone that I've ever spoken to, he found that the club in Adelaide, Mars Bar, was a bit too in your face and a bit too intense, and felt more able to be himself and to explore his identity there, which is why we're talking about it in today's conversation. Now, before we get going, I need to say that Marcus wears a lot of jewelry, and so you can hear this kind of jingle jangle going on sometimes during the conversation. Just wanted to let you know in case you were curious what that noise was whilst you were listening. Let's get into it.
I don't know about you, but I very much grew up that, you know, you get a girlfriend, you get married, you know, have children, all that kind of stuff. So I grew up in that kind of household, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's fabulous. But so for me, mentally, going against all of that, you know, was a big step that I had to overcome and deal with, because, you know, part of my personality, part of my nature is about people pleasing. I like to make people happy, which is something I'm trying to turn around a little bit and make it maybe not always about that, a people pleaser. So I don't like disappointing people. And obviously I had to think of a way where I could actually tell my parents in a way that wasn't going to disappoint them. I thought, hey, what's more better than coming out after a Tina Turner concert when we've all had a good night out? So yeah, that was my coming out story.
So how did the conversation go?
It was, we sat down. It was just me and mum and dad. And I said to them, I'm gay. And there was silence for a while. There was awkwardness. And mum chimed in and said, well, what about her? Because obviously I pretended I had certain girlfriends during that period, which were more so my best friends, definitely not girlfriends. And well, what about her? And what about her? And what about her? I said, she was a friend, nothing ever happened, you know. Well, maybe it was because of her that you turned out gay, maybe because of the heartbreak. But it's like, no, there was no heartbreak. I faked all the heartbreak. You know, there was none of that. The reason why they didn't work out is because, you know, I was gay. So it went on, the conversation went on for a couple of hours, and there was all this uneasiness and awkwardness and all that. And yeah, it was stressful. It was definitely not easy. And, but I got in the car and both of them said to me, don't forget, we always love you. Mm. And that was good. Oh, look, I'm getting emotional now. Mm. So yeah, there was that. And then it went on for probably about 6 months. where there was just uneasiness and, you know, there was certain things that just couldn't be said or discussed. And now they're just like amazing. You know, they embrace certain boyfriends, you know.
Certain boyfriends.
And, yeah, they're the most. Well, I've had, there's been some questionable boyfriends, let's be honest, but we've all been there. So, yeah, they're absolute champs now. I adore them. And, you know, I put them into a scenario that they weren't expecting to happen. And, I mean, I'm sure the writing was on the wall. I mean, let's be honest. I had Culture Club posters all over my walls as I was growing up. You know, Boy George was totally my hero. So the writing was on the wall for sure. But I think there's always that denial, I guess. But, yeah, they're absolute champs. They're the best. And not everyone is blessed that way. So, you know, I'm 100% grateful.
What was it like living in those 6 months of unease between you? Did you think, well, that's awful. It, this is what it's going to be like forever? Or did you have faith that it was going to level out?
I don't know. I'm Cancerian, so I get very emotional. And I tend to get very imaginative as well. I get carried away with my imagination, so I tend to create scenarios. Mm. But I think my underlying foundation is a positive attitude as well. So I think I always tried to look and imagine a brighter outcome. I think that period, to be honest, I feel like the period after coming out gay was probably easier for me to deal with than the 6 months before I told my parents and my family that I was gay. That period was torturous.
Oh, because of all the imagination and spiraling.
Yeah. Whereas afterwards, you know, once you feel like you've disappointed people, you can start to mend it. And, you know, show them that nothing's different. So I feel like the 6 months prior were more difficult than the 6 months after. Mm. That's not to say that the 6 months after weren't difficult. I mean, they were still hard, of course, you know, and there were many, many tears and there were many arguments over the phone and all of that, you know, hanging up on each other and all that kind of stuff. Oh. Like, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. No, you don't understand. All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's not easy. And it's the fear thing. I think it all comes down to fear of the unknown. And I think my parents, and very much my mum, was very much about, you know, what are the neighbours going to think? You know, how are you going to be judged? How is your life going to be affected by this so-called decision that you've made? So my mum was more so worried about my welfare through what I was about to start experiencing more so, maybe. Mm. I don't know. It's weird.
And so before you came out, had you done anything? Had you practiced your homosexuality?
Yes. Yes, I had. Yeah. And I tried to be with girls. Nothing ever happened. It just didn't work. It just, not even the whole kissing thing. It was like weird to me. And I remember, you know, sex education back in primary school, being told that this is how it all works. This is how you have babies. And I remember being mortified, thinking, no, there's got to be more to life than this. It just doesn't make sense. And I had a massive crush on my PE teacher at the time. He was just a footballer, hot. Amazing. Oh, and he totally
got basic taste in men. Is this what you're telling me?
Yes. Yeah. I knew that, you know, it was meant to be a certain way. And I think everyone does. You kind of know your path. You tend to cover it up a little bit, but you always know your path, I think.
Yeah.
Whether it be career wise, whatever. I think you're always guided and you're on your path. You know, just go with it.
Yeah. And what did you know about being gay?
I remember going to, before I felt safe, I went with a girlfriend of mine to Mars Bar one weekend. We were drunk and we ended up the night there. And I'm not going to lie, it was my first time in a gay club and it was incredibly scary. I felt totally unsafe. Mars Bar, for those of you that don't know, it was very much a dark kind of seedy kind of place on first impression, and maybe probably second and third and fourth impression as well. But I walked into this place and I didn't feel safe, and it was very dark and I was very young, And I was like, I don't know if I, you know, this is, where's all the fun? Where's all the glamour? Where's all the glitz and all that? It was all very, you know, the carpets were sticky with, you know, alcohol and, you know, people were smoking and back when we could actually smoke in clubs and it was dark and it wasn't the fun and fabulous vibrance that I was imagining it to be. It was a bit more of a meat market kind of thing. And, you know, you were considered fresh meat going in there the first time. And it was scary. It was really scary.
That's really
and
interesting because that's not my experience of that space. I don't remember it in that way. I remember it as...
It changed.
Oh, okay.
It definitely changed. And then I didn't go back.
Okay.
Then I didn't go back for a long time. And then I hooked onto this other place called the Beans Bar. And that was a bit more lighter and a bit more vibrant.
Ah.
And that was where I started to really find my community, I guess, when I started going to the Beans Bar. I found it a lot more open, a little bit more friendly for me.
So that first experience then, you were terrified. You were put off going out to spaces. How long did it take you before you then ended up going to the Bean Bar? Were you like, no, that's it. I'm never going out.
It wasn't that long. It wasn't that long. I just did not really connect with the Mars Bar the first time around. I wasn't so-called terrified. There was still this curiosity in me of what's it all about? What's it all, you know? I had immersed myself enough in, you know, Grace Jones's kind of music and, you know, the whole nightclubbing scene that Grace Jones kind of described with her songs and all that very much resonated with me. And so there was this insane curiosity. But I think there was also the fact that I went to Mars Bar before I'd actually come out. So it was that kind of what if this all just goes to shit on me kind of thing. So there was lots of things, I think, fighting with me. And part of me being Cancerian is, you know, obviously being the crab, is a retreat to myself, retreating to myself. And even though I feel like I'm an extrovert in many ways, there's a certain part of me that is definitely an introvert. And I crept back into myself a little bit, you know, make sure the waters that I was about to swim in was a place I felt safe, that, you know, big sharks were going to come and eat me, you know what I mean? It was a weird time. And that's when I think my better approach into the community, my more safer approach into the community was a place called the Beans Bar, like I just said, that was on Hindley Street in the city. And essentially it was a lesbian-owned club with a good majority of lesbians in there as well. And there were drag acts and all this. It was fun and it was really cool. And it was a lot more brighter. There were a lot more lights and a lot more colour. There was an outside area where there was a lot more of a relaxed kind of air to it all, whereas Mars Bar didn't have an outdoor area. It was very smoky and very heavy. So it was the wrong start for me. Beans Bar gave it to me. It gave me that more of a positive kind of feel, the positive vibe, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So to paint the picture for me.
Yeah.
First time in Beans Bar, what did it feel like to walk through that door?
It was really good. It was great. It was a vibe. They were playing fun, dancing music. Everyone was dancing. It was colourful. It was vibe. People were talking. After I found my feet at Beans Bar, everything started to work out for me a whole lot better at that point. But it was fun. I remember seeing, you know, my, you know, first real kind of drag shows at Beans Bar with some of Adelaide's iconic drag acts, absolute icons in the drag entertainment industry. And they just captured my imagination and took me on the most wildest rides. It was amazing, amazing.
You said something along the lines of, after I found my feet thanks to Beans Bar. What did you mean by that?
I felt comfortable. I felt comfortable. I felt like I could come out of my crab shell. I think what I do when I walk into a room, I suss what the room is and where I fit in the room. And then I'm like, okay, I know what to do here. So I felt like I was doing that in the gay community as well. I had to walk into it and, you know, look around, suss out the situation and then feel comfortable. Not unlike a crab at all. Like a crab will suss its surroundings and know that no octopus or no larger predator is going to come and attack it. So I felt very much like that. I think that's my nature.
What was going on in your life at the time that you'd had been going there?
I had a boyfriend at the time and we got along really well. It was nice, but he ended up getting quite jealous. I wanted to have a lot of fun. I wanted to dance and express myself, and it ended up getting quite abusive. So it was pretty much during me evolving and finding out who I was, which was the joyful part. But there was a lot of stuff that happened behind the scenes that kind of kept on limiting me as a human being, you know, abuse, which was not okay. So, yeah, there was it was a joyful period, but it was actually quite a painful period as well. We were the same age, and he had been out for a few years longer than me, so he was a bit more developed than me and knew how to try and restrict me. And it was, yeah, it was tough. It was tough.
So was he someone that you met through Beans, through the scene, or you met otherwise?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It was only a couple of weeks after going to Beans Bar, I met a gorgeous lady, and we went to a birthday, a party in her backyard, and met one of her friends, which was this guy, and we got along great. It was wonderful. It was super duper great. But then when we started dating, which was pretty quickly, and then he moved into my house, it became quite abusive.
Oh, how quickly?
Within about 8 weeks, I reckon he'd moved into my house. Okay. It was pretty quick. But you know what? I think you can tell I'm someone that just jumps in. I like, you know what? If it feels good, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm not someone that dilly-dallies. I've got this kind of approach that's like, just do it. You know, live your life, have the experiences. Some are going to turn out great, some might not, but just do it. So I think I've always been like that, much to my detriment sometimes. But it got bad.
It's how you learn, it's how you grow, throwing yourself
exactly
in.
Exactly. Yeah.
But help me understand the situation. So you were a baby gay, let's say, so you were at the very beginning of that journey and still figuring things out when you started seeing him, and then through going out, through dancing, through expressing yourself, you were pushing the boundaries of who you were, and he didn't quite like that?
I think my personality was starting to get loud, I guess. My personality was starting to really find its voice. And after being shy for so many years and withdrawn for so many years, the extrovert in me started to rear its head, and it was becoming more and more evident, I guess. And he tried to hold it back because I think it was threatening, maybe. And this is only my estimation. So yeah, and because his personality was a little bit more quieter, and so through the mental abuse and sometimes physical abuse, it was...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, to hold me back. And, yeah, ended up, yeah, not that great. Did I answer the question? I can't remember what the question was now. But, yeah.
Are you okay with talking about this?
Yeah. Okay, totally, okay. Totally. No emotion there at all anymore. It's fine. But, no, it was good. I think, you know, we need to have those kind of experiences and go through these things to really work out who we are. Yeah. You know, I feel like... You know, you don't find that love of your life, which I'm still searching for, until you've had all those incredible heartaches as well. You know, I think we need to know what full-blown heartbreak is. And I don't want, obviously, anyone I care about to have heartache. And, you know, I look at my beautiful nieces and nephews and all that kind of stuff. I don't want them to, you know, go through heartache. And I certainly don't want them to go through the abuse in relationships that I suffered at all. But it definitely made me stronger, and it made me amazing in regards to finding who I am and what I will stand for and what I won't stand for.
This is the weird thing about relationships that I can never quite get my head around, is that you meet someone at a certain time in your life and you either accept that they're going to grow and change, or you kind of put this weird pressure on them to stay exactly the same because that's what they were when they met you and that's what you're like buying into. So it can create all these weird dynamics within a relationship about those expectations, but also about, oh, I want to say property. I want to say like that person becomes your thing and can't change without your permission. And that's when it's all toxic and weird and gross.
It's really hard, isn't it? Relationships are tough. I think all kinds of relationships are hard, but intimate relationships are obviously the hardest.
Mm.
I find that, you know, I tend to look at a lot of my relationships in my life and try and work at, you know, essentially all relationships for me are mirrors of my own self. So I try and look at my relationships that are going wrong, whether it be my friends or, you know, well, I don't have an intimate relationship at the moment, but if I was in an intimate relationship and it was getting clunky, I'd be like, okay, well, what is my part in this? How am I doing this? Instead of just constantly blaming the other person, like you, it's like, hang on a minute, what is my part in this? Like, why is this happening? And what part of my psyche is doing this? And I don't want to be too flippant about it, but even if I've had two relationships that were physically abusive, and as easy as it is to say, you know, you shouldn't beat me, you know, you shouldn't do that, I need to also look at myself and take some form of responsibility and be like, why have I created that? Why have I allowed that to happen to me? At what point did I decide mentally that I would give that power to somebody else to be able to hit me? And I think that's when we can grow and, you know, find that strength to be able to say it can't happen again.
I understand, you know, the point you're making. I disagree that you need to take some form of responsibility for someone being physically abusive to you, because that's their choice, that's their action, and that's not anything to do with your behavior or who you are. But I do get the wider point you're making about the dynamics in a relationship and how sometimes what the thing you said was relationships are mirrors of myself. And from that, I'm taking that you kind of get what you give.
Yeah, but it's not just about also getting what you give to the other people in your life. It's getting what you give to yourself as well. And I think for me, like if I go into a relationship, you know, this is a good example, actually. If I go into a relationship thinking, well, this is going to be doomed, all my other ones were, but you know what? Let's go for a good ride. It'll be fun while it lasts.
At least I can save money on rent.
And I think that's where that terminology baggage comes from, someone with baggage. You know, if we go into these relationships thinking, well, I was screwed over the last time, he cheated on me last time, this one's bound to do it at some point as well. You know, having this kind of mindset that dooms the relationship before it's even frickin' started. It's like, oh, you know, you tell me you're going to phone me at 7 o'clock and you haven't phoned me and it's 7:30. A lot of people instantly will be like, well, he doesn't care about me. Well, clearly he's cheating on me. Or this or that. Or he's just a frickin' jerk. How dare you keep me waiting? Where something sincerely could have gone wrong, like, you know, work, life in general. So it's about, for me, not just giving what you get to that other person, but getting what you give to your own mind as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, giving yourself grace.
Yeah, exactly.
But
don't just think the worst all the time. That's it.
There's a balance to strike, right? Because you need to learn from what's come before and what's happened before, and you need to trust your instinct as well. But you need to also not be dragged down by those things and stuck on them. And I think sometimes it's hard to get that balance right. And I think it's really easy to overestimate your intuition and be like, well, I'm sure it's this, I'm sure it's this. And then, spiral. Oh, spiral. That's what we were talking about before. Overactive imagination.
100%. I agree. It's interesting. And I mean, look, I'm not the best one to talk about relationships. Otherwise, I'd be happily married.
Well, I don't think that's true either, because it's just dumb luck.
I don't know. I think it's me, to be honest. I look at my parents and my sister, actually, even, have been married forever. Mum and Dad are about to celebrate, I don't know, 120 years together, something like that.
Seven millennium, yeah.
That'd kill me if they heard me say that. But I look at that and I'm like, I'm never going to be with someone for 50 years. It's actually a physical impossibility now.
Well, you don't know, chirogenic chambers. Well,
it'd have to happen pretty any minute now. You know, it'll be a while, hopefully. But I think I'm at a point now where I do, hopefully, can give somebody the best of me. I think, obviously, I wasn't at the point in my previous relationships where I was ready to give someone the best of me. I think I was in different stages of my life.
But it also sounds that you are putting a greater value on relationships that last a long time over loving relationships. And I'm not saying that your parents' relationship is not a loving relationship, but just like, just because it's lasted a long time doesn't, like, that doesn't necessarily mean
anything. Oh, God, yeah, 100%. But you know what? We don't even get along with ourselves half the time. How can we get along with another human being forever? And, you know, going off on another tangent, people go on about, and I do as well, and I absolutely subscribe to this, but people go on about, you know, saving the planet, saving the animals. We can't even be freaking nice to other human beings. How the fuck can we be nice to the planet and nice to animals when we're fucking shit towards each other? And then it's how bad we treat ourselves. Let's start treating ourselves with kindness. Start treating each other with kindness, and then hopefully the world, the planet, and the animals can follow suit as well as far as getting our kindness. But we cannot treat kindness to another human being until we start being kind to ourselves.
Well, yeah. Well, I agree with that final statement, but I think maybe we need to focus on the planet first.
Oh, we do. But I truly believe it's impossible to respect something 100% authentically unless we respect ourselves. I feel like true respect, true love, all of that has to start inside of us. It doesn't happen externally.
Yeah, and this kind of goes back to what I was saying before. I think that sometimes the way that we're socialized, the way that we're trained as human beings is find someone who loves you and then everything will sort itself out rather than figure out how to love yourself and then you'll find someone who you're compatible with and then you might do some things for a few years. I mean, that's certainly what's fucked me up quite a lot in growing and developing and trying to figure out relationships and how to interact with other human beings is that I have thought that in order to understand myself, I need to find someone who understands me.
Do you understand yourself?
Oh, no. No. But I don't know if you should understand yourself. Isn't it more fun to be like, oh, why did I say that?
I love that. I love when you can say that when you're actually sober as well. When you wake up with a hangover and you're like, okay, I was just a twat last night. I know kind of why I said it because I was drunk. But actually, I'm joking. Ooh. I'm actually sober. I've been sober for the last year and a half now, which has been the best thing I've ever done.
Okay. But who are you mean to? Come on.
Oh, no, I'm not going to go there.
I know.
I'm not going to go there.
You started. You've got to finish the story.
I've been, you know what? Drugs were never my thing. I could never do drugs because drugs would make me very emotional and very erratic and quite, it would not end up in a good night. There would always be tears. That wasn't ever going to work for me. Alcohol, though, made me really, I discovered, and this was only about 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago when I stopped, that alcohol ended up making me angry and I didn't like it. If someone provoked me, and I'm hopefully a nice, kind person, but I found on alcohol, if someone said something that I did not agree with that kind of provoked something in me, I find I would come out a little bit aggressive and a bit nasty maybe as well. So I've had a couple of experiences and I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? I don't need to do alcohol. I didn't need alcohol to have a good time. I didn't need alcohol to have fun or get on the dance floor. So I was like, why am I even doing it?
So you're not going to tell me about being a twat to someone last night?
I can, yeah, I've I've said some really nasty things on alcohol and I don't like that side of myself.
So let's go back. We were talking about your life at the time that you had frequented Beans. And we talked about being in a relationship at that time. And I think crucially, as part of that conversation, we were talking about you being in the relationship and the tension in that relationship because you were finding out who you were. And I want to find out a little bit more about who that person was and how you came to find him.
Yeah, it was tricky, you know. I was never a physical fighter, ever. I was always someone that relied on words to fight my battles. So I very much, because I was so shy as a child, I find people that were shyer or introverts when they were younger really evolved in a mental way differently because, you know, we were always lost in our words and we'd create scenarios in our heads and words in our heads and storylines in our heads. And it was, you know, quite an imaginative world. So when it came to the time of actually expressing those words, we could really express those words because we had been workshopping these words for a very long time in our head. So when I was confronted with bullies at school, my words would come out, and which would make them angrier, of course. Forward, obviously, into my relationship period, when I was in relationships with guys, those words were still very much there, which would make them angry, which would obviously create... Are you making me think of all these things now that I've never really thought about before? This is really good. I feel like I'm on a psychiatrist's couch. So I'm really processing all of this for the first time in many ways. But I feel like I... Because my words were so strong in regards to being developed as sentences that could essentially hurt. And the guys that I was in relationships with didn't have that. That wasn't their strength. Yeah. Their strength was a bit more physical. So it obviously ended that way. So it was, yeah, it was difficult. It was tough.
So you're saying that you had an ability to get under people's skin?
If I was pushed that way, I didn't want to. I wanted to be kind and generous and, you know, all those things that all of us strive to be and, you know, compassionate and all that. But if somebody provoked me to be reactive, I would know what to say, definitely.
Yeah, okay.
If alcohol was involved, absolutely some of those words would get nastier to the point of wish I didn't say that. But I think we all say something horrible in the heat of the moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And if you can't get under the skin of the person that you're in a relationship with, what are you doing? I mean, come on, let's be honest.
What's the point? I know, right? I'm better at it. I have controlled that. I feel like I really think about the things I say now. I think I used to say things reactively. Uh-huh. These days, I tend to think about what I say before I say it now. Whether it be good or bad, I think I stand by 99% of the words I say these days.
Okay. Are you willing to go cheesy with me? I feel like I don't really need to ask you that question. I feel like you're going to say yes.
Oh, come on.
If you were to go back in time and you had an opportunity to have a conversation with Marcus on the very first night that he showed up at Bean's Bar, what advice would you give him?
That is such a good... That is like a total cool question. I would say to him, I'd say you're okay. Yeah, you're okay. It's all good. Most of our life, we go about our life trying to find where we fit in, you know, trying to find that, well, that piece that we are. Where's the jigsaw that we fit into? I feel like that's half of our battle in our life. And the moment you realize that you don't actually have to fit into a jigsaw, you're just okay. Just have fun. Don't take it all so seriously. Just enjoy life. And if you're there, experience it. Like, turn up. Turn up mentally, turn up physically, and express yourself. Because you know what? We've been given this beautiful life, the ability to live on this earth, for fingers crossed, a long duration, God willing. Live every day and just you realize that you're okay. And you know what? Some people might judge you. Some people won't. Some people will love you. Some people might not. But it doesn't affect the fact that you can still live and breathe and dance if you want to and hug if you want to. You know, just you're okay. That's what I'd say. You're okay. Just do it. Just do it.
And then Nike would sue you.
Oh, my God, that sounds like Nike. Yeah, just go out there. Get up, dress up, show up, no matter what you do.
Do you have any memories of Bean's Bar Or maybe clubbing from your own queer scene that you want to share? Well, if you do, I want to hear all about it, so why not get in touch? I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I can't do it alone. Go to lostspacespodcast.com, find the section Share a Lost Space, and then tell me all about what it is you got up to. There are always bonus points for embarrassing photos, okay? Understood? If you don't have any memories of queer clubbing, or if you don't want to fill out a form, why not just get in touch on my Instagram or my Facebook, where my profile is at Lost Spaces Pod. I would love to talk to you. You can also find out more about Marcus by visiting his website, marcushammonds.com, and that is Marcus with a K, or following him on Instagram at Marcus Hammonds. If you enjoyed this episode, I would really appreciate if you took the time to subscribe, leave a review on your podcast platform of choice, or just tell other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. My name's Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.